Oh my God, you're my dreamboat for sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the one and the only, the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. It is a delayed episode this week. I've been, I've been busy. But I had the episode rather later than never, right? Better late than never is what they say. I had this week. I had several shows to do, working on season 7 of Back to the Future, the podcast. Had the Schmodown Rundown with Frank Janish over there on the SEN Network. I had two episodes of the Hall of Fame to get done. And then also, Jen Sturger, you might know her from AEW for a while. She was with everywhere. She's been everywhere. You might know her. You've heard the name, Jennifer Sturger. Jen Sturger. Her and I have a new show together called Coming Up Next. And it's over there on the SEN Network. And we're having a lot of fun with that. It's a really sports show, Sports Nation, cold pizza vibe over there. So it's been fun. So I am a little delayed about getting this podcast out, but it is, like I said, better late than never. And this week, I have a fun guest, man. I didn't know this guy prior to doing the show, but I grew to have an admiration in it for him because he is a lot like me in some ways. And this isn't any sort of self-aggrandizement, but he's a go-getter. He sees something that he wants. He figures out a way to go get it. And he always ends up being a success in whatever it is. And he started the Mammoth Film Festival. I'm talking about Tanner Beard. And Tanner actually won the competition game show Holy Moly, which gave him $250,000 for first place, which is pretty cool. And he's a native Texan. He was in Austin, Texas when we did this interview. And I had a lot of fun talking to him. He's a big movie nerd. Obviously, he's a sports guy. And shockingly enough, we get into Back to the Future, which somehow I always get into Back to the Future. I don't know how, but sometimes it always happens. So anyway, I want to get to it right now. This is my interview with Tanner Beard, talking all things Holy Moly, Mammoth Film Festival, his life and career as a local Texan boy who's made it in good old Los Angeles, California. So here it is right now, Tanner Beard on the Brad Gilmore Show on demand.
And he joins me right now, the winner. He is the winner, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Tanner Beard, the White Buffalo himself. What's going on, man?
Hey, man. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. I'm excited to talk to you. So tell me, how does it feel? How does it feel being the winner?
I mean, I don't know if words get that alarm going off says everything. Oh. It was alarming to win. It was incredible, man. I mean, it still is. You know, I'm still kind of reeling in it. It's only been, you know, hadn't been 2 weeks, I think, or right about since it all came out and you finally get to tell the world, you know, but the fact I got to go into our charity means the world.
How long was the between when you finished it and then when it was announced? Because I always think about this with these competition shows or reality shows. You wonder how long do you have to sit on the secret, and did you leak it to anybody?
Straight up have to lie to people's face. Like, did you win? No, you have to watch. You just have to watch. You know, so you're lying to your grandma and stuff. But I think it was we finished the show right before COVID hit. So it was like the first part of March. And by March 17th, like, we're all in our houses, you know what I mean? So it was from that time up until September 10th, you know what I mean? So as soon as it came out on the East Coast, you know, it kind of ruined it. I live in LA, I'm in Texas right now, but I live in LA, and it kind of ruined it for some of our friends because stuff would come out online or on Twitter or Instagram, you know, about the East Coast feed, and they're like, you son of a bitch, you won, you didn't tell me, you know, so it was pretty cool, but it was a pretty special day.
So, I mean, where did, now I know that, you know, golf is obviously something that you're rather good at, obviously, but where did you first start the skill, right? We were talking about Peter Pan's putt-putt, were you hitting Peter Pan's putt-putt at a young age, or when did you start developing the love for the game?
Ours was called Tiger Mini Golf. Back when I was a young man with grandma walking over there. But I played golf in junior high and high school. I started playing golf, and I think in sixth grade with my granddad and my dad every day after church. Like, it was just like clockwork every Sunday. You know, we played golf, and I finally got to an age where I was able to go out with them. And I think I started playing because I didn't want to hold everybody up. You know, those guys they're playing golf, and you're like, you don't want your granddad being like, hold on, you know, Johnny has a 9 every hole over here. But Yeah, I think that was it, man. Just junior high, I played golf in high school, and I kind of gave it up. I started a television program while I was in high school, and I just kind of saw myself, you know, getting into the motion picture business as a career path. As much as I loved golf, trust me, in junior high, I wanted to be Tiger Woods. I think just about everybody my age that even had any interest in the sport. So it's been with me since 97, I guess. So I got a mad love for golf. And, you know, we just started a golf brand that coincides, again, with our 501c3 charity. So anything we could, that's the cool thing about having something like Mammoth Film Festival is we get to incorporate so many cool sports into something that's a film festival. It just has so many avenues that enrich it, you know, to bring attention to it. So it's a lot of fun.
What? So you said in high school you started a television show. What was the show? Was it like a local public access type thing?
Yeah, essentially. But, you know, just for our high school, I just didn't understand, like, why other schools had these, like, news programs that the students put on. And we had just gotten a new drama director, and I wasn't, like, really doing theater and stuff. I was playing sports, you know, in high school. But 16, 17, 18, you know, I kind of was like, man, I really have this love for making movies. And I was winning a few student film festivals. And, it, you know, next thing you know, I started jumping into doing plays and stuff in high school. And then you get this, and all of a sudden you just never turn back, you know. But I got to start a television program. I was like the first one to school every day in high school, and then the last one to leave. So it was you know, it was a lot of work, but I got to do whatever the hell I wanted. And a lot of 18-year-olds don't get to say that. And if anything, it just jump-started me into a career path where I feel like I'm 36 now, as of a few days ago. You know, I feel like I've done a lot more in the production world at an age that, you know, is something a lot of producers are 50, 60, and they haven't, you know, had some of the accolades I've been lucky enough to get. So it was cool to start it off early at Snyder High School.
Snyder, Texas, man.
Texas, man.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate it.
Buffalo.
There you go. So, okay, you start this high school television show doing whatever you wanted, 16, 17, 18. When did you move to L.A.?
At 18. Like, at as 18. Soon as high school. Yeah, I took some college while I was in high school. So, you know, I wasn't sure what the route I was going to go. I had a scholarship to Auburn University, and it just, who was going to go study film in Alabama? No offense to Alabama, but it ain't Hollywood. And it's not New York. So it was one of the two. I went to L.A., and kind of did this for a few years, you know, as a, you know, it was a culture shock, as I'm sure you can imagine, going from Snyder, Texas to Los Angeles. But I started a production company in 2008, just the rigmarole of not being a working actor, just wasn't hacking it for me, not being in charge of your own career. So I started a production company that, you know, led into producing a lot of movies, still doing a lot of acting. Started writing some stuff, directing some stuff that led us to do Mammoth Film Festival over a course of several years. And yeah, man, we're just kind of all over the place. I remember one though, speaking of Houston, I was filming a horror movie in Houston just as an actor several years ago. And it was like on the 4th of July. And I just remember being like, I'm from Texas. Like shit gets hot, but it ain't Houston hot on the 4th of July. So hats off to you guys for sticking around. I'm sure you acclimate after a while, but man, Houston's a cooker.
It's hot and humid. The humidity is what kills you, man. You can't breathe outside.
You take a shower and you can never get dry.
Absolutely. Okay, it seems like that you followed this path of you're a self-starter. You're not going to wait for someone to come hand it to you. You're just saying, if it's not working, I'm going to go out there and get it. And that leads me into the Mammoth Film Festival, man. Man, what a mammoth task to take on, quite literally, right? I mean, organizing a festival of any kind. I remember when I was 19 here in Houston, I organized a crawfish festival. Right. And that was like the worst thing that I've ever done in my life, just because it's so much work and you got to do all these things that you didn't think about. At first, the idea is we're just going to serve some crawfish or we're going to show some movies. Then you got to think about the logistics of it, the venue, the staging, the lighting, the tickets, the security, the concessions.
You know, there's two ways you can put this in a perspective. So I get the crawfish. I mean, you think it's like, this was supposed to be fun for all of us. Like, this is, do I love this? But there's two ways to look at it, you know, as far as perspective. If you understand movies and stuff, this is like producing 10 films at the same time. Or if you don't get that reference or you don't understand that analogy, this is like doing 10 weddings at the same 3-day span. You have 10 weddings in 3 days. is what producing, you know, a film festival looks like. But I love it, man. I got a great team. Theo Dumont. I couldn't do this without Tom McMansuri, Alexander Chando. Our whole team is fantastic. We're all filmmakers anyway. And Theo has run, you know, the most successful short film festival in the nation, Holly Shorts, which is in its 16th year. I think it's going on right now. But you know, it takes a village, you know, obviously, but, yeah, man, you really gotta love it. But it is like producing 10 films at the same time, running Mammoth Film Festival. Champagne problems though. I love it, man.
I hear you. But it just shows you that you have to have an immense amount of love to do something like that. You can't just like film. Yeah. Right. I don't know what made me think to do that, but I just had this idea and I was like, I'm going to do a coffee.
That's something I would want to go to, and I would get the luxury of enjoying myself because I didn't have to go through what you had to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, how has COVID affected everything for you as a filmmaker, actor, and organizer of events? I mean, to me, I know a lot of people out there in Hollywood, it's just been on the standby.
A lot of my friends are just now starting to work, if anybody's working at all. I know of like 15 productions going on in LA, four of which I heard were shut down. I mean, hell, dude, Batman got shut down. Pattinson caught COVID. You know what I mean? How much that cost the studio? And yeah, I just applaud everybody for trying. Like, we were actually the last film festival to go in the nation. We finished up like March 2nd or 3rd. You know, like I said, everybody was in their house by the 17th. And what's funny is we literally finished our film festival March 2nd. There was like talk of like this virus going around, like it was still pretty new. You're like, everybody should Perel. Hey guys, did you hear about this virus? You know, and then you know next, then I'm shooting Holy Moly the 3rd, the 4th, the 5th, and then the 6th, and then by like the 7th or 8th, you know, they're like, hey, you may come back and shoot the last bit of this. You may be animated. You know, it depends on how this virus works out. We were animated, so that just goes to show you how from 0 to 60, this thing really went once the month of March hit. But I was very grateful that our film festival had a 2020, because that gives us, you know, we still have over 100 days until our festival happens. But, you know, it's frustrating because I don't know, like, you know, how's the landscape going to be in February 2021? Because it's hard to have a film festival as small as ours and tell people, hey, don't go shake hands. Hey, don't go meet big time producers. Hey, don't go meet other, you know, actors and celebrities and meet them and talk to them and network. And like, that's what we stand for. That's why we've, you know, become the fastest growing film festival in the nation. And we're telling people, well, dude, we can't do that. So I don't know where we're going to be, but right now we're just hoping for the best. And, you know, train's moving on as quick as it can. You just got to have tracks in front of it.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And to me though, I think that with this pandemic, especially out there in Hollywood, you've seen, you know, people have to figure out how to do things differently. And it's forced almost a creative gene. When you get boxed in the corner, then you start thinking fourth dimension. You see what DC did with that DC Fan Dome, which was their version of a film festival. And it was so successful. They were like, why are we doing Comic-Con? We'll just do it this way, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that you have to be creative in times like this.
I'm sure you guys have had to kind of redefine everything. I'm sure, like, you know, you're like, well, we know of Zoom, but we damn sure know how to use Zoom now. You know, I'm sure you guys like to have your in-person studio stuff. You know what I mean? It's can be frustrating, but I got a comment on your poster back there.
Yes.
The Film Festival 2020 this year, we did the 30th year anniversary of Back to the Future 3.
Three, yeah.
30th year anniversary, and we had the car out there, and it was a blast. We had like a night screening outside in like this big patio area, like right in the middle of town. People came out. It was back when people could stand next to each other. It was lovely times. But it was really great, but I saw that and I had to mention that.
Yeah, so this is actually a poster for a book that I wrote called Back from the Future, and it's about the making of the films of Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3. I'm a huge fan, and I can only imagine how great that – because, you know, here's the thing. Maybe you can back me up on this, being from Texas. A lot of people did not like Back to the Future 3 when it first came out. It took time.
It's true.
I loved it.
As a kid, I was kind of like, well, it wasn't the first one. Now I love it.
Right.
I think it was the Doc Brown love story. I think it just maybe people kind of felt, but dude, how good is F. Thomas Wilson in the third one? That's when he was like, damn, the dude's a damn good actor. You know what I mean? He's playing so many characters of a character. And I'm just like, this is incredible performance. You know what I mean? But I, after going back and watching it as an adult, I like loved it more than as, because as a kid, I'm like, I used to love Indiana Jones 2, you know, and the Temple of Doom as a kid. That was my favorite one. Now it's my least favorite one. I'm like, now the third one is a masterpiece. You know what I mean?
Last Crusade's the best of the four, for sure.
It's you're talking about an amazing trilogy, but this is just a great movie. I'm like, Indiana Jones is like blowing dudes away. And I'm like, this is, it's like dark, but also still PG-13-ish. It's an incredible film. Incredible film.
Yeah.
We're talking about movies from like 35 years ago. But,
yeah. Hey, man, like I said, I wrote a whole book about it, so I can talk movies.
It's my business, man. So I love
it. Absolutely. So, I mean, you've gotten to work with a lot of cool people, though, out in Hollywood. I mean, just from the production aspect and in front of camera. I mean, you were part of the Robert Rodriguez production, right? From Dusk Till Dawn.
Here in Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's where Robert does all of his stuff. And you know, to me, that show was really good. The adaptation, you know, not the original. Obviously, the original is great, right? The one with Clooney and Tarantino. But this one was real fun, man. How did you like working with him and working on that show?
Yeah, I mean, it's Robert Rodriguez, you know, even growing up in Texas, you know, I used to look up to Rodriguez, Linklater, Terrence Malick, and I've gotten to work with two out of those three, and I know Rick, you know what I mean? So I haven't got to work on his projects at the moment, but, you know, I've gotten to work at Austin Studios, you know, that's where my production company was up until last year. I mean, I was in Austin for 10 years. But just, I mean, being on that set, you know, he has the big toys, man. You know what I mean? I do a lot of indie films. Not just as a filmmaker, but as an actor as well. So when I, you know, I've only gotten to do TV a handful of times, but it's so nice being on a big set, man. It really is. Like, I'm easy. I just like to work. I like to be in it. But, you know, you get real pampered on a big set like that. And plus you're just working with just, you know, the best of the best from camera to sound to other actors. And it's Robert Rodriguez. It's just a blast. Met a lot of great friends on that show. I'm still friends with today, so.
But you seem to be like me. Whenever you're around somebody like that, somebody who has the knowledge, are you going up and asking as many questions as you can? Or are you going over to the camera guys or the light grip and asking just little things, technical things to make your own filmmaking better?
Yeah, like I said, I was just an actor on that one. So I definitely didn't want to be like, hey, what kind of camera is that? Is it the Arri Alexa? You know, but I wanted to be like, you'll never find me in my trailer. You know what I mean? I get the nickname on set always ready because I'm like, I just sit around set and I watch. Because I've produced movies where you got to, it's just knowledge. You know what I mean? So when I'm just sitting there and my job is to just be in front of the camera, I'm always like, oh, this is how this argument could have been avoided. Oh, this is really great. Like, remind yourself, this is how they made it work. You know, you can never stop learning in this business and it's fun for me, man. I mean, I live and breathe it, you know, so it's always a blast, but Rodriguez is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So you win, holy moly, $250,000, right? I mean, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money from somebody from Snyder, Texas, right? That's a whole lot of money. Yeah. That's Long Green Duggan.
It's like, and it's like, you know, luckily we get to put this back into what we're doing at Mammoth, but for a split second, it's in my bank account and it just looks really good. And then it's like, all right, get it out of here. Can I look at it one more time? Can I see it? Okay, get it out of here.
Yeah. It's like for me, whenever those student loans hit one time and I saw hey, we're about to ball.
You just make the money. You're like, now I can pay off my credit card. It looks nice when it's in the bank account, at least for a second. It's a reminder that hard work does pay off. But no, man, just so incredibly lucky. You know, there's 96 people that get on that show. And I didn't even think, I just thought like, hey, just simply being on the show, you've already won because, you know, I'm playing no matter what, not for Tanner Beard out there, but I'm playing on behalf of trying to get our brand new film festival out there into the world in a big way. And I'm like, so cool that I was able to play for it for that. But that aside, you know, it's exciting, man. You get out there, I'm super competitive and the show is hilarious. It's, you're out there for entertainment. 100%. That's number one. And Rob Riggle, Joe Tessitore, they're phenomenal. They really are. Jenny Mai, she's incredible. That's already hilarious. But the show is incredible competition. Every single one of those 96 people, like, would have thrown, you know, they're out there to to for themselves. So I tried not to make like too many friends, you know, like everybody's kind of huddled in this tent. And I didn't want to go in and just start like talking to every single person, because then it's like, that affects the way I'm going to play the game. Like if I get smacked in the face by the windmill, I hope you do too. You know what I mean? Because if you don't, that means I have it's going to be even harder for me. So the competition was cutthroat, like for everybody. A lot of people made friends and everything, but now I was out there to win. You know what I mean? And then after it was over, I was like, hey man, I heard you telling that joke in the tent. You seem like a really cool guy.
Yeah, right. Well, that's kind of all how it is on the actual golf course. So sometimes, you know, even with your playing with your buddies, they hit a good tee shot. You're like, yeah, man, that was a good shot.
It was good. It wasn't great.
Yeah. You could have done a little bit more with your backswing. Your hips didn't rotate properly. But
your elbow. Do you know that?
No, yeah. Aside from that, it was good.
Fun, man, but do you play a lot of golf?
I have a course, I don't know, maybe a quarter mile away from me, right? Timber Creek Golf Course. So I go play on it occasionally, all the time, with my radio co-host Booker T, and he is phenomenal. He's an athlete, so he's great. You know,
Booker T, I used to love Harlem Heat and watched Harlem Heat when I was a kid. Like, I mean, he's Booker T. You know, tell him old Tanner Beard said hello.
Well, next time you're in Houston, I know you're in Austin. If you ever come to Houston, you got to come play golf with us. That would be awesome.
Wouldn't that be great? I'd love to. I'll take you up and put the date down right now.
Invitation's always open, but he's great. I'm not that good, but I enjoy just being out there in the Houston, Texas heat. I do enjoy being out there. But talk to me about, because when I first heard about the show Holy Moly, the idea, I thought it was a great idea. And then you watch it, like you said, Rob Riggle is just so funny, man, and everything that he does. But he is great as this color commentator. And then talk about Steph Curry's influence, though, because I think that he really had a great vision for the show.
Sure. Well, you know, Steph Curry is obviously the executive producer of the show. I think it was kind of him that led the charge. I think just with timing and NBA, that, you know, what was going on with the NBA, the virus just hitting us, being able to barely get the show off. You know, we didn't get to have the, you know, the interaction with Steph that I think the season one people got to have. And you kind of miss that. I mean, you know, Steph Curry is one of the greatest basketball players ever lived, you know, so that aspect would be pretty cool. So unfortunately, aside from being animated with Steph Curry, you know, we didn't get the luxury of getting to have that kind of interaction that would have been pretty special. But, you know, there's always more time. Who knows? They might come back and do something where we can or get to meet him or shake his hand, or I might just meet him in passing one day. But, you know, it's a little bittersweet, but it's, you know, it is what it is.
So tell people what the goal is now. Now that you have that 250,000, it's into your 501c3. You're doing a lot of great stuff with Mammoth. You got the new brand, Tanner Beard Golf, I believe, is where .com, where people can go get a lot of the merch that you're sporting right now. Yeah, but tell people what the plan is.
A lot of people, especially with me being, you know, in the entertainment industry, from March to pretty much still going on, you know, I've had a lot of time to not do anything. We love, you know, this white buffalo image that we created when, you know, kind of got the nickname coming from Snyder, Texas. But we just love the image, and I love golf apparel. You know, I'm always out there looking for like the coolest new Nike shirt or whatever. And my business partner and I, Atomic, we were just like, dude, you know, why don't we just maybe take this time, and we have so many great apparel things that we do for the festival. Like, why don't we turn this into like something? I'm playing a lot of courses. I get to play with a lot of influential people. I like to go to different courses and log stuff, and I love to give shit away, you know what I mean, like raffles or whatever. And just kind of had this passion for creating our own golf stuff and having that golf brand and lifestyle, athletic wear. You know, we have a golf game that's about to drop soon that's really exciting. I have a supplement company. We're doing Arma Golf, where we're, you know, about to be one of the only supplements in the golf world right now. Arma Sport, please look them up. It's great stuff. I mean, incredible stuff. It's approved by the Olympic Committee and everything else. So there's just so many gears turning in the golf world that Tanner Beard Golf, we're just calling it TBG now. Just the sound of my name over and over when I have to talk about it sounds weird. Be like if Tiger Woods was like, Tiger Woods brand is. But TBG is, you know, 50% of the proceeds go back to the 501c3, but on top of that, we're still trying to do some cool shit in the golf world. We got new stuff coming out almost weekly, And we got some really great stuff coming out in October, but we did kind of an early launch pre-sales. We're going to be done with pre-sales like next week. So we're firing away, like shipping all next week. But check it out, man. There's some cool stuff on there.
Awesome. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Again, Tanner Beard, go find him. And where can people follow you? You on socials?
Yeah, at Tanner Beard across the board, except for TikTok. I didn't make it in time. Those damn millennials got to me.
It's banned anyway. Who gives a damn? But that is the great Tanner Beard. I appreciate you, man.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, Brad, what have you done now?